Blog Talk Radio.
I believe in living. I believe in the spectrum of beta days and gamma people. I believe in sunshine, in windmills and waterfalls, tricycles and rocket chairs. And I believe that seeds grow into sprouts and sprouts grow into trees. I believe in the magic of the hands and in the wisdom of the eyes. I believe in rain and tears and in the blood of infinity. I believe in life, and I have seen the death parade march through the torso of the earth, sculpting mud bodies in its path. I have seen the destruction of the daylight and seen bloodthirsty maggots prayed to and saluted. I have seen the kind become the blind and the blind become the blind in one easy lesson. I have walked on cut glass. I have eaten crow and blunder bread and breathed the stench of indifference. I have been blocked by the lawless. And if I know anything at all, it's that a wall is just a wall and nothing more at all. It can be broken down. I believe in living. I believe in birth. I believe in the sweat of love and in the fire of truth. And I believe that a lost ship steered by tired seasick sailors can still be guided home to port. Affirmation by Asafa Shakur. This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and as usual, it is always wonderful to be here with you live and in living color. Well, today was a very interesting day, and certainly we have some updates for you on quite a few fronts. One, of course, is an update on Dr. Mutua Shakur. And as you just heard, we open up with Mumia Abu-Jamal. Both political prisoners, we are making certain that we kind of move even in a more aggressive manner to free them both. So we're going to give you some updates again and also some information about what's happening with them, their campaigns, and certainly what we're doing with the Recharge Genocide 21 to, really lend more support in their liberation, in their freedom. Moving right along, we're going to also talk tonight about what's coming up with the Recharge Genocide 21 Project, the Black Human Rights Movement. There is a virtual conference coming up. You know, we do that every other month or so. And so the next one is coming up for December as we begin to observe International Human Rights Day. We are planning to take a letter of intent to the UN this year. We had to put things on hold, needless to say, because of COVID. But we are ready to move forward. Now, this is phase one of our letter of intent. It is kind of a prelude to some things that are to come. And certainly we are now getting ready to get geared up for really putting the petition out, not the petition, but the other information out for Recharge Genocide 21 as it pertains to providing educational pieces, information, how folks can get involved, and, of course, training. There has to be advocates and activists for the Recharge Genocide 21 project. And so we're getting ready to gear up the training for that. Again, the virtual summit is coming up. It'll be December the 7th through the 9th. And we will definitely have for you various reports as well as, again, some training sessions. We're looking to do a rally at the United Nations on December the 10th and at that point be able to provide the letter of intent that we are submitting to the United Nations officials to begin this process. With that said, we are also now focusing on some of the 21 areas that we have been talking about over the past year or so. Here in Philadelphia, we began with, shall we say, taking over a building here in Philly that had been vacant for 20 years. It was really a statement that needed to be made in terms of just letting this government know, as well as our people, that when we talk about reparatory justice, we are, in fact, not just talking about the monetary or the check or the cash or whatever you want to call it in that context of compensation. We're talking about land, property, and other things that can be readily accessed like now. There is an abundance of land in the United States that is not occupied. There's also properties that is owned by both, but city level as well as state as well as federal. And so one of the things that we're focusing on doing now is looking closer at those kinds of things. How much property, how much land is owned in the various cities slash states? This is where our project is now going. Because when we talk about enslavement, one of the things that the We Charge Genocide campaign is about is now putting together committees, task forces in every major city so that every city slash state can provide a report based on an evaluation research in regards to enslavement in that state. This, to my knowledge, has not been done before, where we can bring together from every state that dealt with slavery an overview, an actual examination of enslavement in those states and those cities that are in those states, compiling that data so that we have a comprehensive kind of educational material or data, as well as being able to present it for presentation. So again, this next year is geared to research, examination of data, also being able to now prepare for testimonies, which we'll tell you more about later. But the first step at this time is to begin to put together some of the information, the historical information, the information that's in some of the other kinds of archives and so forth, that literally gives us a bigger, clearer view of enslavement by state. Now, of course, that's out there in different formats, but not in the format of utilizing it to charge the United States government with genocide. That is what this particular project is about, to get that data from every state and also from the cities. Say, for example, we know the state of Pennsylvania, of course, employed, or shall we say, enacted the peculiar institution, enslavement. Well, we know that Philadelphia, Lancaster, Chester, other counties in Pennsylvania also had slaves. So we want it broken down into that context, not just by state, but by the county or the borough or what have you. This is very, very important for the future. The next generations need to have a succinct and concise record and an account of what has happened. And we need to be the ones to provide that, not white folks. And so that is one of the missions. So again, we're going to tell you more about that as we proceed. And also, let's see, was something else? Oh, yeah, definitely this. One of the other things that we're talking about, again, is land. So we will now be formulating our own We Charge Genocide land bank, Black Land Bank, so that we can have in our own kind of registry, the number of properties or land that is owned by, again, low federal government. You know, I was communicating with Sister Keisha earlier today, and again, I am going to continue to make sure that folks know that when we talk about certain things, we also have a plan of action, because that seems to be what is missing a lot, plans of action. So we're hearing the conversation about, you know, we are owed this, or we should have that, or here's the problem, and blah, blah, blah. But then when we say, well, okay, what's the plan of action in order to deal with these issues? And that's where we're not really hearing a lot, you know, said about it. So we're going to make sure that we do our part in bringing forward the kinds of things that we feel are necessary in order to advance us in these areas of reparatory justice, i.e. reparations. Let me see. The other thing we're going to talk about, too, is, oh, hold on, let me check something for a moment. There we go. The other thing we're going to talk about also is, and we talked about this a little while back, student loan. Student loan rescission is what we're talking about. Not forgiveness. We want it rescinded, eliminated. And the argument and the position has to be before other people get it. Black folks, our students, our families should be getting this first. So we're going to talk more about that in terms of why we're making that position clear and why we're getting ready to take that into some of the colleges. There's no way that folks should be silent about the fact that the Biden administration and others are talking about student loan forgiveness and yet not talking about who should be getting it first. So we're going to make that position clear. It is our students, our families that should be obtaining it first before anyone else, and it should be, again, based on what we know as reparatory justice. It's only fair, needless to say. Okay, hold on one moment, just making certain that our guest, oh, by the way, family, we have for our guest tonight, Professor James Small is going to be joining us, and hold on 1 minute. Okay, there we go. And again, we were in D.C. earlier today. And, of course, today there was a rally. Actually, there was two rallies. So we went to two rallies today. And hold on a minute. I'm trying to make sure we have able to get some folks in for tonight. Okay, so, yeah, there were two rallies today. One, of course, was the Foundation Black America, Americans, or Foundational Black Americans, FBA. They had a rally today. Of course, that was Tariq Nasheed and his group. And then the other was with, oops, hold on 1 minute. There we go. The other was with the Uhuru group. They had a rally also today. So we are going to get the report on from Professor James Small. We're going to get a report from him, of course, on the FBA rally. Also joining us on the live line tonight for the first time, you're going to meet a sister who is going to be joining our tour, actually, starting in January. MWM will be going on tour for the entire year almost. We plan to go to at least 25 cities as we prepare for the Million Woman World March. Yep, that's right. We announced it on October the 25th. The Million Woman World March is coming, and we're getting ready to, actually tomorrow, we have one of our first coordinating meetings at 1 o'clock on Zoom. It is a national and international call because the Million World March is national and international. We're looking at doing a major thing in the States. There will be one particular location that we will host the event for. the U.S., but then it will also take place in other locations throughout the world, such as the Cameroon, Ghana, South Africa, Jamaica, etc. That's what's getting ready to happen, family. We're getting ready to bring black women, African women together from all over the world. Why? Well, I'm going to tell you more about why, because this is not just about a march. It, you know, 1997 wasn't just about a march, truly. But now we're going to kind of show you why we did what we did in 97 and why we're doing what we're doing now. Can you imagine bringing together African women from around the world? Well, imagine it, because it's getting ready to happen. Never happened before. Getting ready to happen now. You know how MWM like to do. We like to kind of, you know, make sure that we create history as we did in 97. Well, it's about ready to happen again. But now, not just to assemble. Well, it wasn't just to assemble then. I thought when folks saw what, you know, we did, that they would like, yes, let's, you know, do this, this, and this. That didn't happen. So over the years, I realized that, you know, there has to be a plan. And once again, we are prepared to do that. So, again, we're going to talk to a sister who is going to be joining us as we proceed in this next year. It was such an honor to meet her. It actually a blessing, you know. Every now and then, something happens, and you can kind of get a sense that, yes, this is supposed to happen. Well, recently, we were infiltrated again and had to clean house after some really crazy, chaotic kinds of stuff. And so it kind of, you know, threw things back a bit. But fortunately, a blessing came. And so you're going to meet Sister Sheila Brown, who is really going to be, I think, a really major or key part of when we talk about raising up the mother of civilization. Part of that, of course, is making certain that our sisters are able to come forward holistically all across the board. So we're talking about health-wise in particular, because, look, you can get all the money in the world. And yes, that can help with health, but I can tell you, sometimes that if that's your focus, that's not necessarily what you want to do. So we want to make sure simultaneously, while we talk about you know, generating revenue and becoming more financially stable, which is what MWM definitely is planning on doing now. But another primary focus is our health. If we do not do that, oh my goodness. At any rate, this is going to really help, I believe, our sisters in a lot of ways to not only become healthier, but to become, you know, really spiritually, holistically, just, you know, more able to thrive, more able to be empowered. And here's the key thing, family, to sustain it. How about that? Because a lot of times we get things, but how do you keep it? So we're going to be talking with her very shortly. In the meantime, I'm going to take a quick break. And when we do, we're going to come back with Sister Sheila Brown. She's going to tell us about her book that she has available, and also just kind of give you a little insight into what's going to be happening as we get ready to come to Detroit, Chicago, Newark, back to D.C., back to Baltimore, you know, Cleveland, New Orleans, Memphis. These are some of the cities that we will be coming into, bringing the Recharge Genocide 21, but also gearing up for the Million Woman World March for 2023. All right, family, listen, we will be right back in a minute. And so, oh, wait a minute, throw one down. Hold on 1 minute, get rid of that. Until we, okay, there we go. We're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. And then when we come back, we're going to talk to Sister Sheila. Mm-hmm. Like Eddie Grant, living on the front line. Yep, and that's exactly what's going on for some of us on that front line. It is on, you know, because some of us have been prepared to do that. And needless to say, MWM is definitely positioned in such a way. At any rate, to recap, of course, we started off with Mumi Abu reading something, or shall we say, giving information from something that Sister Asada Shakur some time ago. Quick update on Mumia, of course, again, to go back into court on December the 16th. Unfortunately, the last time around, October, turned out the way some had hoped, well, most had hoped. But we kind of expected, you know, some of that to happen. But still, you know, it was a blow. But, you know, we're looking forward to continuing this fight and to ultimately freeing him expeditiously. And so on October, y'all. And so December the 10th, there will be a rally in New York. There's going to be a two-day virtual conference. We're looking to do a town meeting also on that Friday, hopefully at the Malcolm X Betty Shabazz Center. We're waiting to see if we can get the partners that we need for that. The purpose of this is, of course, to be able to bring forward the issue of COINTELPRO, that being relevant to our political prisoners, and, of course, to be able to be prepared to really bring forward and to escalate, you know, that whole issue. A sidebar, I did speak with Baba Bilal Suni Ali today, and he conveyed to me that Dr. Bantula Shakur is doing a little better, that he was able to walk, which, you know, for those that do not know, you know, that had been complicated over the past month or so. So he is improved. Also, that, you know, it seems that he is now able to get treatment again. He was so ill that he couldn't even get the treatment for his cancer. So it does appear that he is, that the treatment is going to resume. So, you know, it's not what we would want to hear in terms of, you know, him really being able to come up from out of the ailment that he has, but it is, you know, somewhat improved. But the point is we need to get him out. That's the bottom line. So I did speak with, I rather communicated with his son today as well, Talib, and we will be talking in the next day or so because, you know, there were some things they were working on And, you know, he wasn't able to really kind of go into that yet. So hopefully we will have him on next week and he'll be able to share with us what some of the next steps are. At any rate, that's the update on Dr. Mutula Shakur. And, of course, with Mumia Abu-Jamal, again, you know, there is an upcoming trial for December that folks are gearing up for. We will have some new information for you very soon because I did not realize until maybe yesterday or today that some things have really gone on that we really need to know more about in terms of how his defense has been handled. And again, we're going to share some of that with you in a very near future. Okay, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. And with that, we are going to get ready to talk with a sister that I mentioned earlier is going to be joining us in the very near future to a greater extent because she is like, she is the bomb, I got to tell you. I'm just getting familiar with her, but from what I'm seeing, I already know. And I'm usually a pretty good person to be able to kind of critique some stuff and see where it's coming from. And I can tell you, I haven't seen anything like this in quite a while. It's well-balanced in such a way that any of our sisters will be able to relate to it. And that's really, really important. What I'm going to be teaching and training when we go on tour is going to be really geared to sisters who want to or are already involved in activism and advocacy, but also in the warrior kind of realm. For those sisters who are already there or wish to be there, I'm going to be providing now training, for lack of a better word, for those who are aspiring or want to advance in those areas. We have to have sister warriors now to step up in such a way that they represent the feminine aspect of things, okay? You know, we do have sister warriors who are, you know, just absolutely beautiful and conduct themselves in a very graceful manner, in a very, you know, shall we say, I'm just going to say this, in a manner that, you know, does not depict them in a more mannish kind of way. And this is what our focus is, to make sure that they are well-trained, capable of hurting you in any kind of way possible, be it mentally, spiritually, or physically. Again, we are extremely holistic. So when we talk about warriorship and training, it will cover the gambit. Again, spiritually, mentally, and physically. So again, this sister, you know, she's very well balanced. But again, her area is going to be both spiritual and the physical, but the physical not in terms of self-defense necessarily, but more in regards to health. So without me going on about that, I'm going to bring her in. I want everyone to introduce one of our new sister guides. And her name is Sister Sheila Brown. And so let me open up her mic and welcome Sister Sheila to this session of New Day Resurrection and welcome her to the New Day family and, of course, the MWM Sisterhood. Hey, sis, how are you this evening?
Greetings, Queen. Can you hear me okay?
Yes, loud and clear.
Perfect. Awesome. I'm honored to be here on your show and meet your audience and share some insights that I want to share with you all.
Wonderful. All right. So before we go in a little bit, and again, we're just going to give folks a little snippet of some things, and we're going to bring you back and really have you elaborate, but share a little bit about you, you know, who you are, what you do, and why.
Well, again, thank you again. My name is Sheila Brown, as you know, and I am the founder of an organization or an online wellness shop known as Queendom Care, and that's Q-A-R-E for care. What I do is I, in addition to providing custom products that help promote the physical and spiritual aspects of what I call divine health in women, which is to be in excellent physical condition, to possess a sound mind and to experience spiritual balance at any age. I focus women on the head, the womb, and the feet, particularly with eye care, ear care, and oral cleanses, with vaginal steaming and womb work, and with foot health. And what I'm attempting to do is help women achieve at a very young age the science and the practical benefits of what I call total body alignment, which is when a sister's head is elevated in divine awareness, her womb is centered in creativity, and her feet are grounded in divine reality so that she can move through the world fully consciously aware of her purpose and how to fulfill it so that she can make the kind of divine impact that she needs to do for herself, her family, and her nation. And when that happens, we all win because the sister is fully receiving all of the resources that she needs to maintain a healthy mind, body, and spirit, and then she can pour into others. And I do this primarily with two mechanisms. One is through my work on what I call the Divine Self-Care Strategy, which is my new book I released, A Wellness Guide to Total Body Alignment, and then my work with food and wellness. As a someone who has lost 135 pounds naturally over a 15-month period and had a really eye-opening awareness of what political, social, economic, and spiritual elements were operating in the background of my life to reduce me to someone who had a food addiction, and seeing this common thread among my sisters suffering from what I call food substance abuse, and falling in all of the traps that have been laid for us. So this work is so personal to me. And I'm also someone with legal background. I'm a licensed attorney from the state of Texas, although I live in D.C. right now. And I'm also someone who has a very deep and meaningful connection with Black nationalism, with what some people consider to be a very controversial avenue for it. But I was deeply immersed in the Nwabian Nation, also known as the Ansar community, from the ages of 18 to 28 before going to law school. So I have a very well-rounded perspective on our role as women, as conscious women, and as healers in the world.
Ashe. All right, family, will y'all hear it? I mean, this is what we've been working on, and big ups to Baba Yao for, you know, just making this happen. I mean, he hooked us up right away, and he knew that it was going to be a definite match. I mean, this is what we've been talking about for our women and girls. And again, when we bring Professor Small on, I'm going to be asking him about joining us for the brothers. Just for those who still, you know, want to dance on that one. You know, yeah, we are talking about our sisters, but we also definitely got some stuff coming up for our brothers as well. But again, you know, I'm not apologizing or trying to make any excuses. When I say our sisters, I mean just that. I don't care, you know, what anybody else thinks about that. We have to do what we have to do. That's just the bottom line. But now, sisters, so tell us, how did you, okay, you mentioned about your journey in losing, you know, over 100 pounds, 130 pounds to be exact. And so I think this is so important because, you know, I travel throughout the U.S. And oftentimes, you know, on public transportation because I like to really see and feel and know, you know, what's going on in our communities. And surely our women, a lot of them are so overweight. And this is just, it's not only not healthy, but, you know, this is going to have, not going to, it is also having an effect on the children. Because a lot of times when I see the women, I'm looking at the children, and a lot of times they are obese. And so, again, you know, we can keep talking about these issues and problems, but until Black women come up with some real ways to address some of these things, we're going to look at generations coming in with hypertension, diabetes, heart issues, and other kinds of ailments, particularly after COVID, that we can possibly, if not eliminate, at least lessen some, if our women and girls are given some kinds of information that is going to help them to know a little more about food and nutrition, and but again, to present it in such a way that's a bit more palatable. So tell us a little bit about your particular journey and you know, just the method. I think that's so important.
Well, you know, it's interesting because everything that I do today is rooted in one decision, and that was the decision to reclaim my life. So it was the year 2016. My son had just turned 18, and I was over 300 pounds, and I was miserable. I only did what was absolutely necessary to sustain my life and to keep us afloat. I did not want to engage in the world. I did not like getting dressed. I did not like myself. And I was in this vicious cycle of really abusing food in a way that I could mask as loving food, as being a great cook, as being a cook for my mother. So I would cook and I would make a meal that was sufficient for 8 people, and it would just be me and my son. And we would go through that food, or mostly I would, in a very unhealthy way. And all of that came to a halt on this particular day. It was my son's birthday, and I took a picture of myself, and I literally could not recognize the woman in the picture. It was like I had this epiphany. And so I made a decision at that day that I was going to pursue life. And so it seemed like the moment I made that decision, the tools that I needed started to manifest themselves. So I reached out to a sister who does natural holistic health, and she made me aware of food allergies that I had. And that was the beginning of the journey. So I was eating better, but I was still eating what I call emotionally. I was eating away some pain that was nagging at my spirit that I wasn't even conscious of. And so I started on a journey to do a 60-day juice fast that I discovered watching a film called Fat, Sick, and Nearly Dead. It was a really great film, and I had watched a series of, you know, vegan films, and I was like, just curious. And so I said, what is it all it takes to lose, you know, 90 pounds is to do a juice fast? Count me in. So I did a 60-day juice fast, and I ended up losing 54, almost 59 pounds, I believe it was. And it transformed my life. I mean, I was about 10 dress sizes smaller just from that 60-day experience, and the energy levels were up, my confidence went up, and I just kept pursuing it because I realized that I had been vegan for 60 days, and I just started to eat the food that I was choosing, and man, the pounds just started shedding off, and I was exercising, and the more I saw transformation, the more confident I became, and within 15 months, I gave myself 2 years, within 15 to 17 months, I had dropped 135 pounds, no doctors, no medicine, no surgical interventions. But what was very clear to me, sis, was that the first weekend of that juice fast was the sign that I needed that this was something bigger than I had intended. Because what I did not realize was during the week, I was functional. I went through the juice fast. Nothing was a problem. The weekend was the issue for me. The weekend is where the demons manifested themselves. That was the time where I was alone. And that was the time that the challenge came in. And so I was sitting there in my bed, because normally on a weekend, I would have surrounded myself with 5 plates of food, popcorn, butter biscuits, anything I needed. Like, I just had it. It was my way of treating myself, so I said. And so I did the same thing that I would normally do, except for the fact that I didn't have the food. And I think instinctively I must have reached for popcorn as I turned on the movie, and that's when everything hit the fan, because there was no food there. And I realized I was going to have a hard time making it. And so that was the understanding that I had an unhealthy emotional relationship with food. And I nearly didn't make it spiritually that night. It was something so devastating. And that's the story. But what evolved out of that was a course that I teach about how to overcome emotional eating. And I do it in 21 days. But the key for that was I understood that there was some political and some economic. There was a way that our enemy had weaponized food and was taking advantage of all of the systems that had been put in place to make life as difficult for me as it had been emotionally and financially, that made me a single mom, that made the prospects of being a woman in a healthy relationship with a black man nearly impossible, and that had interrupted every aspect of my life, because everything in my life had to be fought for, everything from maintaining a job at work to maintaining my son's educational wellness. It was like I was going to battle every single day, and I simply did not have the energy. And I realized that was the point. And there was a truck at every corner. I literally could not resist driving down the street and pulling into the magnetic pull of a McDonald's. Even if my intention was to just drive to work, if I saw a McDonald's, if I saw the Golden Arches, I would suddenly find myself, da-da-da-da-da. And I started to recognize, wait a minute, there are some traps that are just laid there for me to fall into. And that's when we say there's a system of racism, and some people misguidedly use the term white supremacy, it is so ingrained in society. Sure. It looks like wellness, it looks like normalcy, but these are the things that actually operate in our lives to further impede our progress, interrupt our health, and interrupt our free will in ways that we can't even imagine that is operating. For example, you don't really enjoy the foods you think you enjoy,
but
our foods are not created by chefs anymore. The foods are being customized and instituted by scientists who master the art, who literally put people under those brain scans and measure their brainwaves in response to chemical compositions that we call ingredients today. And they measure the brainwaves to find out what kind of response does someone get when this combination of sugar, salt, and fat are put together. So you have no chance in this form of witchcraft that is coming off as food science. There is no food available if you're not cooking it yourself, essentially. You are becoming a victim to a system of a food byproduct that was designed to addict you, that is so easy to mask because food looks like a normal substance. But the way we are taught to engage in it, and the proof is in the pudding, we can see the unhealthy relationship with food that is stemming from our unhealthy relationship with self, with family, with men, with children, with the factors that we have learned to identify, as Dr. Neely Fuller referred to them as the pillars of control, whether that's food, entertainment, law, education, socialization. All of these things operate through society in ways that we haven't imagined. And the best way that I could bring awareness to that was to teach my course over 10 weeks and drop these jewels, but also to explain that our relationship with food began long before we were born, that we have an ancestral connection to food that is also rooted in trauma that we have to overcome by looking at some of the successful ways our ancestors, like Mother Harriet Tubman and Booker T. Washington, had to deal with what I call food trauma and the food war through substance abuse.
I say, I know that's right. Woo! Well, family, I'm sure you all can tell we are going to really get into some nitty-gritty stuff for 2023 and make sure that our sisters have a certain level of capability to really, really advance, and to do it from a frame of reference of a certain type. You see, this is very important. This is what has been missing in a lot of things that I've been watching over the years, and that is to have a real solid kind of foundation that is both traditional, but at the same time, it has that balance of, you know, being contemporary, being modern, but, you know, have the essence. And that's why with Sister Sheila, what we're talking about, you know, she has an approach, a concept that she's been able to develop. And this is what we're talking about as black women. You know, there is so much nonsense going on, and I'm going to speak more about it because it has to be addressed, and that is that unfortunately there are people who like to steal your work or the stuff that you've developed, and I'm saying any of us who have done the work, the research, the gone through the trials and tribulations, and then you have people that want to come in or have not come in, observe what you're doing, watch what you're doing, and then, you know, extract from it. And so that has become injurious, and that puts it mildly. And I'm not talking about, you know, you inspire someone to do something. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about people who literally are hacks, and that puts it mildly too. But folk who are parasitical, that are like bloodsuckers, waiting, watching for creative minds, creative kinds of, you know, ingenuity, concepts, ideas, waiting for that. And y'all know this is what white folks have been doing for eons. I mean, this is their specialty. Well, now black folks, oh, no, let me not say black folks, Negropeans have now adopted this thing, you see. And so we're going to start pointing this out so that people can become not only more aware, but also be able to be more actively involved in, you know, nipping them in the bud. Because by not doing so, it kind of co-signs or gives them permission. So I just want to do that little sidebar. This sister has developed something, and this is what we're going to do with each other. You'll see this demonstrated with MWM and this Universal Movement. We're going to highlight our sisters. We're not afraid of brilliant. Now, that's scary for some folk to say that this sister or brother is brilliant or great, and particularly when you say it about sisters. You know, you can get away with it a lot better if you say a brother's brilliant or great. But say that about a sister, oh, my gosh, it becomes anything else but. Okay, anything else but. Oh, she's tripping. Oh, she thinks she's all of that. Oh, she's ego. All of this. I'm like, wow. But you could say the same exact thing about a brother, and it's, yeah, man, yeah. It is so funny. But at the same time, it really isn't, y'all. So, you know, we get ready to change all of that. Sister Keisha, by the way, hail up my sister. She texted me something earlier and said, yeah, it's a new day. Well, y'all, let me tell you, yes, it is, definitely. But anyway, listen, before we let you go, my sister, because you will be black with us soon. oh, wow, I'm so excited and just intrigued because this is such a powerful issue and situation for our sisters. And again, you know, I'm a little kind of in a different direction, so I'm so happy to kind of, you know, have you coming on board because you're nicer. I mean, and we need that. We need that. See, I'm kind of the, you know, I'm a disciplinarian. I'll just say it. I'm definitely, you know, I'm the kind of person where if, you know, I'm like, yo, I don't have, you know, I just can't deal with, you know, certain things at this stage of the game. And so, again, I'm smart enough to get folks that or to be associated with people who can do that part of it. And it lends to the 360 aspect of things because for me, after 100 years, if folks still think chicken is cool, I don't have the patience for that. I really don't, you know. I mean, after a lot, Honorable Malaji Muhammad, even Daddy Grace, for those of you who don't know who Daddy Grace is, look him up. But even Daddy Grace and them had a dietary law, you know, with what they were doing. Father Divine, you know, folks like that. They were doing some stuff with, you know, telling you, you know, yo, you should take care of your health. This is what you should try to eat. This is what you should try not to eat. They were doing that, you know, years ago. And here we are today, you know, engulfed with frankenfoods, amongst other things, and we still don't get it that, for the most part, anything that's white, you should leave it alone, more than food, y'all. But anyway, you know, again, sugar, white sugar, salt, white flour, right? A lot of things that are white, you should leave alone. And again, you can take it whatever way works for you. But the point is, this is stuff that we were taught over the years. So again, since I'm so happy to connect with you and other sisters who have areas of expertise, that's what it's about for MWM. I don't know it all. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to know it all. But I'm good at what I do, I can tell you that, right? And so we're connecting now with sisters who are good at what they do. And we're going to promote them, highlight them, embrace them, show them some love. I know that's new for some of y'all, because some folks be like, haters? Ooh, wait. I'm like, wow, we don't even need white folks. We got so much shade being thrown.
And you brought up an interesting connection too between the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey and W.E.B. Du Bois, because that same sentiment I have learned as a woman who has so much to offer our people is that spirit of W.E.B. Du Bois, that talented 10th, is very much still alive and prevalent, and it operates in ways and through people that purport to be Pan-Africanist and who believe that the entire race has something of intelligence and gift to offer. But the truth of the matter is they feel that there is only enough room at the top for about 10% of the population as well. And so they go out of their way to suppress the gifts of others or to simply ignore them. I was so shocked, because anyone who looks at the work that I do, looks at my social media, my website, can see how much I adore and honor our ancestors and Black women in particular. And the response, although I was surprised, has been to either just take the content and rebrand it for themselves, or simply ignore that I exist. And that has been very painful. But the work must get done. And it's just the sense that I will do nothing to help perpetuate your message. It's a subconscious, it's like a passive type of rejection, but it's a rejection nonetheless. And it's powerfully disruptive, because the enemy, if you show any propensity to help the destruction of our people, you will get not only a platform, but you will be perpetuated on platforms that are big and small. They will, the enemy will endorse any type of foolishness and foolery and turn that person into a superstar. And then the other problem that we as sisters have, who have a solution, who actually represent everything that the conscious community claims that they want to see in women, well, when we manifest those gifts and talents and positive attributes, we are simply ignored. The focus is on the sisters who are engaging in ratchet behavior and directing all of your attention to penalizing them or showing how this is not what we want. And it's a science behind it. It's because those are the women who get the attention, and therefore you can parlay off of that attention by simply directing your comments towards their foolishness while at the same time ignoring. Well, the currency is attention. You put your attention on what you want to see in the world, not what you don't want to see. So if you claim you want to see sisters behaving with dignity, purporting the truth, perpetuating righteousness and all that is good, then simply recognize it whenever you see it instead of ignoring it. And that's for sisters and brothers. But what I find, sisters, is that our leadership oftentimes does not want to believe, or want the rest of us to believe, that we are all capable of making contributions as beautiful, as brilliant, and as impactful as the ones they have made, and that is extremely problematic.
No, that's right. Well, you know, fortunately, we get it and are prepared to, you know, move forward to do what it is that we need to do. I'm going to add another little touch in the game, I think, And that is to make sure, in the spirit of Ma'at, that we now begin to activate some of the other aspects of our, if not comedic, some of the traditions. Again, there's a balance. With Ma'at, of course, Ma'at will weigh things out and then, you know, kind of enable there to be a decision to be made. But see, what folks forget is, or if not forget, once a decision is made, an action then goes into effect. And so my point is, what we're now bringing forward is that next step. So the concept and the, shall we say, the philosophy or the methodology that's now being presented is people have to be held accountable now, or more accountable, for what they do or don't do. And so in that spirit, it has to be a balance. You can't just do stuff and keep getting away with it. Meaning, when it comes to us, our destruction, detriment, or whatever, when people slander people, you know, not taking the time to find out, well, is this true, or did that happen, or whatever, but just go ahead and repeat stuff. You see, no, you can't keep doing that and get away with it. There has to be some response to that kind of stuff because it's becoming rampant. And so now we're looking more at how to harness or how to embrace some of the other elements that are connected to Ma'at, such as Sheknet or Heru. You know, and there's other names depending on what school of thought you're in. But my point is, there has to now be a response to some stuff. After that judgment is put in place by Ma'at, this weight on the scale, then what? And that's what we're talking about. I've been talking about this for a couple of years, what I call the Ma'atic Epoch, a time, in a period of time where Ma'at is put in place and it is literally disseminated and executed. So, yes, so Ma'at, of course, truth, justice, balance, reciprocity, honor, et cetera, that is what it is. But then what? After that's done, then what? What are the other processes or applications? That's what's getting ready to come into effect. You see?
Mm-hmm. And I can talk about you right now.
Right. We talk about change, but how's that going to happen? So go ahead. Mm-hmm. Finish what you were saying, sister. Mm-hmm.
No, and I can relate to what you're saying on and on a macro scale. The focus for me has been on how to reverse some of the negative, what I call self-de-emancipation processes that we have been undergoing as a people around this area of wellness and beauty that is misguidingly not wellness and beauty, but the exact opposite, which is what we should be doing as sisters to help, you know, protect our bodies and heal our bodies and maintain wellness and health. It needs to be rooted in this relationship that our ancestors understood very keenly between freedom and health, and using what I call the four elements or a few tools as our ancestors did in order to achieve that, meaning air, fire, earth, and water. And we probably won't have time today to go into that, but that was what really kind of sparked our conversation about what my contribution is through my new book, The Divine Self-Care Strategy, A Wellness Guide to Total Body Alignment, is, and looking at our historical, cultural, and spiritual database that was left by people like Queen Mother Harriet Tubman and the Honorable Frederick Douglass and the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and the Honorable, believe it or not, Dr. Martin Luther King. And these things, when you analyze what their words were, what they left for us through their texts, their poems, their speeches, their writings, their parables, they left us a series of clues about how we are going to overcome all of our trauma around freedom and health. And if we don't understand it, if we don't master it, we are likely not going to make it moving forward.
Yeah, you got that right, sister. No doubt about it. But listen, sis, I want you to stay right there, if you would, please. I've got to call Professor Smalls real quick because he has something to do. So I want you to stay there, though, because I don't want you to go. I want to finish something that I wanted to ask you, but just stay right there for a moment. I need to bring him on to get this quick report, so let's do that. Hold on 1 minute.
Hello.
Yes, greetings, Professor Small. We got you.
Okay.
How are you this evening?
I'm good, my dear. I'm good.
I know you are after today. This is family. We have Professor Small with us tonight, and he does have another engagement. We apologize for the delay, but we do have him with us now, and we're going to talk with him briefly about, of course, what happened today and where we go from here after today. So we're going to have to bring him back because he has another engagement. But Professor Small, please share with us, first of all, before we go into the report, on what inspired today's rally?
Well, you know, the foundational Black Americans and one of the leaders of the group, he's not the leader, but one of the leaders is Brother Tariq Nasheed. And the group had been discussing the whole question of African Americans and their identity, and why other people from the Latin world, from the continental African world, from the African Caribbean world, who comes to this country, usually assume our identity and get the opportunity to take advantages of the privileges and rights we fought for, sometimes to the demise of the Black Americans who fought for it, and yet not ally themselves with us.
Yes.
And so they were trying to find a way to identify themselves so that it would be clear that we're talking about the population who suffered in the United States of America from chattel slavery and extended slavery called Jim Crow. And so they came up with a label, Foundational Black Americans, and they define that to mean those who came to this country before Columbus with the Malian Empire migration here, and those who came before that who were the Aborigines who were here, and then those who came on the slave ship, and the amalgamation of those three groups into one people that we call the African Americans, and they're now also calling Foundational Black Americans, that we have a criminal case against the United States of America, its governments, its corporations, and its courts for reparations. And that criminal case must be defined in a way that it presents the atrocities that's committed against that population. We're not talking about the population in Nigeria or Jamaica or Puerto Rico. They have cases against America too, probably, but they have different cases. We're talking about the cases that had to do with chattel slavery within the United States of America, that a crime against humanity was committed, that millions of our people were murdered, millions of our women and girls were raped and molested, and over almost a 500-year period working us and not paying us. And not just working us and not paying us, because we weren't just a labor force, we were a brain force. Most of the inventions that make America America came from the African-American brain, okay? Most of the money that made all the big corporations came from the African-American labor. Most of the money that came from the big banks, like, for instance, Citibank, you know, got its original money from a bank in New Orleans or outside of New Orleans, Baton Rouge, that was called Canal Bank, and its primary commodity was enslaved Africans, okay? That's the foundation of money for Citibank. Chase Bank got its money from working with the Rothschilds in England to develop the steel industry in England to make the rails for the trains that would bring the cotton from the cotton fields in the south to the ports to be shipped overseas and to the north. And so all these people, all these big corporations made their money. Most of the white insurance company made their money off of slavery. Most of the white banks made their original money off of slavery. Most of the white university, Yale, Harvard, made their original money off of slavery. And all of this was sanctioned by the United States government and enforced as law by the Supreme Court of the United States. And so we're saying, okay, you committed a crime against us. And then right. the Durban Accords that happened in 2011?
Mm-hmm.
The Durban Accords, and where the United yes. Nations and the International Courts of the World declared
yes.
chattel slavery and the transatlantic slave trade a crime mm-hmm. against humanity. So we're yes. saying you owe us. We ain't asking you for a damn thing. We ask it to be paid mm-hmm. for something you took from mm-hmm. us. That's what reparations is about. You paid the Germans, you paid the Jews, and we didn't run the Holocaust. But you're still paying Jews for a Holocaust that our country had nothing to do with my tax money. You paid mm-hmm. the Native American mm-hmm. reparation with my tax money. Black people didn't take their land. White people did. So pay them with your own damn money. You know,
that's right.
You paid the Japanese for your internment of them with my tax money. Black Americans did not intern the Japanese. So why are you using my money? And for the crime you committed against me and the forced labor you put on me, we want to be repaired and repaid. And that's what reparation is about. And it was an intelligent mm-hmm. presentation by 12 to 13 magnificent men and women speakers today to close to 2,000 mm-hmm. African-American men and women, the most, you know, I'm older, 77, you know, I've been to some rallies, right? This is the
right?
most spiritually fired up rally I've ever been to in my life. It was so
wow.
beautiful, the spirit of it, you know? The spirit is so warm, so African real, so African-American,
right.
black, solid, you know?
Right.
So that's what we were talking about. And the next step now is to organize so that get our voting blocks tight. And those people mm-hmm. we elect to the city council and the school board and Congress, if they're not representing us, vote their behinds out of office, and we pick the people we want to run for office so we can get people in these offices to represent us from the most local levels to the national. And that's just
wonderful.
One of the steps. The other is to do the research to get the evidence on the criminal corporation and banks who enslave us. So that we can take them to their own courts or international court and make them pay the bill they owe us for slavery. Write that check right now.
I know that's right.
So that's what we were discussing.
Wow.
It was a beautiful discussion. It was a beautiful reception from the crowd. It was so good to see all my beautiful friends. I saw Pam Africa and I gave her a good kiss, but then I lost her. I was looking for her. I don't know where Pam went. But it was so, and I didn't see you, Empress, but I'm happy to know that you were there and you and Pam were together.
I was there. I ended up having to go over, I don't know if you saw, there was one single brother over there that had some T-shirts and some other kinds of things. And so he had to run. So I ended up having to go at his, you know, stay at his table while he went to do what he needed to do. So that's why you didn't
But it was
see
a
me.
Wonderful
was
day of... And people came from all over, from San Diego, Washington State, Buffalo, New York, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, Chicago, Detroit. People were there from all over the country because this matter of reparations is a serious matter. And this matter of people thinking they can shut us down, we can't criticize the criminals, and got our young men apologizing for crimes they didn't even commit. And intimidating and frightening the black athletes, Tyree and these others. And Kanye didn't say nothing. That was a crime against them.
Oh,
we had to
God.
Take them to court. So if you think we say something, prove it. Prove it in a court of law. I'm going to charge you with defamation of character. That's what we need to be saying to the criminals. You're going to sell me into slavery. You're going to come with the Arabs and rob my Africa. You're going to partner with the Dutch and the British to enslave me. You're going to run plantations in Brazil and Suriname. You're going to come here to New York in the 1600s with the Dutch and enslave me, and then been enslaving me ever since with control of the music industry, control of the movie industry, defamating our character. And you've got some nerve to say I'm anti-something? Whoa, girl, I don't want to go off on the phone because I do have a meeting to go to. But you know what I'm saying? So we're saying to the world, like, yo, look, we're the majority of the world, whether you like it or not. We're the richest people in the world. We're trying to practice humanity towards you, but you better watch your step because we might just change our minds. You better watch your step because we might just change our minds. So, Baba, and black
we're
have
is
to
back.
Get you back.
Black
yes,
is
yes,
back.
Yes. Well, you know,
black
for some of us, it never
back.
Went away.
Hello.
You know, for some of us, it never went away. And
that's
so,
why I'm saying hello. You know, you've been a soldier from day one, you know. So I'm going to have to run Empress, but,
I know.
You know,
listen,
the Million Woman March is still the solid power.
Well, you know,
the women have the power
years.
And they give the man the authority. So,
you know,
you
we
know.
Just did 25 years, and we're getting ready to do the
Million
yes. World March next year.
Right.
So that's one,
yes,
of, one
ma'am.
Of the things I wanted to talk to you about having you on our advisory, because we have some brothers who agree in what you have said and others, and that is
mm-hmm.
that our men must come forward to deal with this issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. So our
mm-hmm.
brothers need an elder to kind of, you know, help them to formulate some of the next steps. So that's one of the things I want to talk to you about the next time we're able to, you know, communicate.
Okay. Well, you know, I'm happy.
All
I'm
right.
getting old and my plate is getting full, but I'll always do what I can.
I know that's right. I know
okay,
that's right.
Beloved.
Lastly, I want to make sure, please tell the group that, you know, we're doing the We Charge Genocide 21 around International Human Rights Day, and there will be a virtual
mm-hmm.
forum, so we'd love to have someone from the group to join us.
Okay, so I'll speak to Tariq. You know, I'm not
okay.
in the group, but I'm a supporter
okay.
of the group. And I even,
okay.
I went to the leadership and I've talked to them, like I told them today, you have to change your language. You don't have to be anti-mother and your father. Africa is your mother and your father. To define yourself
mm.
in your context as an African-American, as a foundational Black American, don't mean you reject your lineage, you know?
That's
but we
right.
have to tell our brothers and sisters from home, you can't come here to America and side with my enemy and
that's
pretend
right.
you don't know what you're doing. Because then you have become my enemy also. I understand
I'm
you're
sure.
trying to survive. I understand you're running from poverty. I understand you're trying to make a living. But side with me, and we can make a living together. But if you side with my enemy, I don't know how long making a living is going to be a good idea.
I know that's
you know?
Right. Baba, thank you so much. And we'll definitely
yes,
talk
ma'am.
Soon. All
peace
right.
and blessings.
Have a blessed one.
Love you much.
Peace to you. Black at you. All right, family, as we just said, of course, that was our elder, Dr. James Small. And listen, we are definitely moving forward with the We Charge Genocide 21. Our position, of course, is similar to what you just heard, a little different in some other ways, both from a tactical standpoint and from a kind of philosophy standpoint, only in that we're looking at 21 areas of genocide, of crimes against humanity, and have a plan of action for each one of them, which we're going to start sharing with you now. Okay, listen, let's go back to our sister. Sister Sheila, you still there with us?
I am still there with you, Queen.
Great. All right. Listen, we have a caller that has a question or a comment before you go. So if you would be so kind to just stay there. And family, we're going to give you the opportunity as well, but we're going to bring our sister back so that we can do a whole session with her because I have tons of questions. And if not questions, just, you know, we want to get to know her better and she us better. And also, because that's what it's about, building, excuse me, family. But hold on, we have someone that has a question or a comment. Caller, you are at 9462. 9462, your mic is open. Welcome to this segment, A New Day.
I am honored. I am absolutely honored. Sister, my name is Elder Mama Kandi, and you hit so many points. I'm blind at this time. I'm an elder. I never had the issue of obesity and weight gain. My struggle is losing weight. that's been my struggle for the last 20 years. I was locked up for a crime I did not commit. Took me 5 years to prove my innocence, but I did it. And when I came out of there, I was 76 pounds. I went in 148, came out 76, and I've been struggling with that ever since. So
hear you speak about
your struggle with obesity. It hit home for me because my grandson, who is not listening to me, he's decided he's going to listen to white people, and he's almost 300 pounds. And he's only 5'8". And he's almost 300 pounds. He's not listening to me at all. He's stuck in this fantasy where grandma don't know nothing. And he don't like old people. And it's just, I'm amazed by this psychosis. That's what it is. And y'all talked about how our people are intellectual thieves, and I'm struggling with that right now. I've written 11 books, and one of my books, a brother named Jesse Sharp, took my Condi Book Publishers off my book and put Sharp Publications on it.
Wow.
And he's making money and I ain't giving a dime.
Wow.
You hit so many things for me. You just hit so many things. And what I begin to realize is I'm 70 years old. I have a serious history of struggle.
Mm-hmm.
I was born in Philly, and the majority of my work was done in Philly. And I lived in Jersey, and I did work there. Now I'm in Ohio. And my work must have pissed some crackers off somewhere for some reason, because they came at me with a lie that you would not believe, and it took me 5 years to prove that it was untrue. It did a lot of damage. I didn't even have a parking ticket, and they threw me in solitary confinement on the lie. So when you talk about this commitment that you have and how you're actually doing the work, that's the part that impresses me. When you say, well, I did this, I did that, you made me laugh. I have 16 children, ages 29 to 57, and they and I were my guinea pigs. You used yourself to figure out how to solve the problem. In my life, I've done the same thing, solving the problems, at least working on them, even if we didn't come to full fruition, but it had to, because some of them were life and death issues. I just love you. You're a time mirror for me. You're a reflection, and I thank you for that, especially at this point in my life because I'm blind. But you helped me with my Ucha Teru so that I can still see myself, and I can see you. And I thank you so much.
Thank you for sharing that story, and we're going to be listening to you in prayer, and hopefully we can communicate after the radio show. I'd love to talk with you some more.
Empress knows how to communicate with me, how to get in touch with me. She'll let you know.
Yep,
okay.
I do.
Bless her heart. She do. Yep.
But it's
not a problem.
Yeah, it's important for us to share our stories of pain and suffering. One of the things that the disciplines that I've had helps me gain a deeper insight about how our enemies work and create obstacles for us. And we have a principle in law called a collateral attack that I have observed operating in political spheres against our best interest as women. So whereas the attack might be directly on the bodies of the men through incarceration or through murder, through statewide murder or state-sanctioned murder, you know, with the women, there has been a more benign attack, and I liken it to what's called a collateral attack in law. So, for example, in a principle that lawyers often use is, if you sue me for, let's say, breach of contract, and I, as a defense attorney, don't really have a defense for my client, but you didn't file your complaint in a timely fashion, I will move the court to dismiss your case by claiming that you violated the procedural aspects of the law. In other words, I'm not even going to attack the merits of your case. I'm going to attack the fact that you didn't follow the rules that govern how we operate in law, right? Did you file your case on time? And I bring that up to say that the war against women does not look like the war against men in many cases. It looks like a war with food. It looks like a war with romance. It looks like a war with child rearing, and it comes to attack us in ways that surprise us. So I found that I didn't have a food problem per se. I had a relationship problem. I had a romance problem. I was suffering from loneliness. And one of the reasons I was suffering from loneliness wasn't just because I couldn't find a man that liked me and that I liked. It was because the pool of available men were not as readily and steadily available as it was for Asian American or Asian women or European American or European women and even sisters from the continent and continental American-born women. So there was a shortage of men, and it doesn't take long for us to see that the shortage was orchestrated and that the available pool of men were of such a nature that it was virtually impossible for a woman in my position seemingly to acquire the type of meaningful relationship that I wanted. And I did not realize that I was dealing with romantic loneliness, which then led to financial loneliness, that then led to a sense of emotional isolation and loneliness. And my coping mechanisms was not drugs. I was too smart for that. The collateral attack on me and the women that I was in the sphere with was dealing with these things, but in a way that didn't directly attack it. So not only was I being indirectly attacked by the policies that this country has instituted to ensure that we don't have a healthy future by having healthy relationships that ground us and give us a sense of security, both financially, spiritually, and otherwise, but I was responding to the attack on me that was a collateral attack in an indirect way as well. I wasn't head on addressing it because I didn't even know that's what the problem was. This is our issue in this country. And until we figure that out, we are always going to be chasing the wrong ball. So for me, the ball became, you know, sweet potato pies and ice cream and sodas and cakes. But I didn't identify the accurate enemy. And I say that to say, when you tell me you're struggling with your weight loss, that's actually like the pimple that manifests on the face, what your spirit is saying to you, or what your body is manifesting, is that there are some challenges that are so deeply painful that your body is just simply screaming out, we're not approaching something the correct way. We're not addressing what the real issues are. We are only addressing the symptoms. Do you see? And that's how oftentimes how disease manifests in us, whether it's a cancer or a mental health disorder, which is nothing what, you know, a manifestation of our food imbalances is that show up like obesity, that show up like heart attacks. So we think we're chasing the heart attack, but really what we're chasing is the childhood trauma that may be rooted in sexual inappropriate behavior towards you as a child. That may even be stemming from something generationally. So it's a big challenge, because to get to the core of what those issues are requires deep spiritual insights and deep work that requires us to go into a place that is oftentimes uncomfortable for us. So I'm going to say, sis, continue to do your work. Continue to see with your spiritual eye. Continue to let people know what is ailing you socially, spiritually, and seeking the support that you need, because you will get the answers. And once you do, the issues that are manifesting as health will eventually clear themselves up. And you do have time. As long as you're breathing, you have time to figure that out. So I'll make sure I try to get in touch with you afterwards, queen.
Bless you, sweetie pie. I'm exceedingly and extremely and gloriously grateful. Thank you.
Thank you, beloved.
All right. Thank you, Mama Condi. Okay. All right, family. Well, let me ask real quick before our sister go. Is there another question, comment? You can press one now. In the meantime, a big ups to my New York family. They came out to join us last week when we did our Million Woman March community, our first Black Family Unity, or it's called Community Unity Day. We're going to be doing that every month, once a month. And Sister Keisha, Brother Mike, Brother Ray Ray, they came out to join us. So big ups to my New York family. That's what we're talking about, how we support one another, particularly at times that are, you know, a significant time period. It was our 25-year anniversary kickoff. And so, you know, for them to come down to be a part of that physically, I mean, I can't tell you how much that really meant to us. And again, we continue to build and grow, and it's a wonderful thing. And also the day before that, for those who do not know, we did, in fact, take over our first public, our first building that was owned by the city of Philadelphia. Now, since then, the cops have come and took our lock off and put a new lock on, and so we are now going to the next step. We anticipated that, but we did make the point. The point is, we went into a building that has been sitting for 20 years in our community, just dilapidating, you know. And so our point is, no more. We're not just going to sit back and let that happen. And here's what did happen. The community loved it. When they saw we were out there cleaning, because there was a lot of trash around the building, certainly inside the building. It wasn't as bad as we thought. Of course, you know, the water or whatever had gotten to one of the walls, and the roof needs to be. But generally, the building is pretty sound. It was a library in our community when it was functioning, and we're going to take it back as a library, but it'll be our library. This is a part of reparatory justice for us. So we're not looking for the same way that other folks do stuff. That's not what we're doing. And so we're getting ready to do a community meeting now so that the community can say this is what they want, and we're the ones who are going to be the entity that will proceed in securing it for the community, for us. And so, you know, it's a struggle, but we made the effort, and not only made the effort, we proved the point. And now the community is not only more aware, but they are now ready to take some action, the people that live in that community. Again, that building's been sitting here for 20 years. Yes, we did, in fact, go into the building. Yes, we did start cleaning it. Yes, we are going to continue to do what we need to do. And that's just one of several. So for folks who say, oh, well, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. Well, listen, let me tell you what's getting ready to happen. Somebody's going to have to answer to why are you allowing buildings that's owned by the city or state to sit in the black community for two decades vacant. When we have homelessness on the rise, particularly with black women, why are you letting these properties sit, not occupied, just falling apart? Well, we know why. With gentrification, the plan is much bigger than just what that word means to most, gentrification. It's really about removal, black folks, and it's a form of ethnic cleansing. And there is a legal term, which we're going to share with you later, that literally maps out what it is that they're doing. And again, when we do some of the teach-in sessions, we're going to convey that to you. But there's legally an area of social justice that we've now been able to uncover or to become more acquainted with to show you what's happening in most major cities that are urban or where black folks are. We've done the research for 5 years. So Detroit, Chicago, Newark, D.C., Baltimore, we've been there, done research, have their plans. They all have city plans. Philadelphia is 2035. Detroit is 2050. Memphis is 3.5. This is not something that like it was before. This is a national agenda that's connected to some other stuff. But anyway, I digress. We'll come back to that later. Let's go to our line. Again, family, if you have a question or a comment that you would like to share, please press 1 now, particularly if you'd like to speak with our sister before we let her go. And, okay, not seeing any questions or comments. Okay. So, listen, before we close out with Sister Sheila, I'm going to ask a quick question, and then we'll get some closing comments from her. So the book, let's talk a little bit about the book so that, you know, folks know that they can purchase it. And but just tell us a little bit, you know, about what the book entails, what, you know, what they can find in the book.
Well, you know, one of the things when I was listening to Professor Small, but I feel compelled to say this because, like you and I discussed, I'm a student of Mother Amy Jock Garvey, and my book is directly connected to our ancestors, and so I feel it is appropriate to say this. One of the things that my discipline has taught me is that the money is not necessarily in the answer. It's in the question. And what I heard Baba Small say is something that raises an important question, is where we are today in history and the rally that happened today, where has that shown up before in our lives? And how did our ancestors' perspective on that issue manifest? Well, we can't have a conversation about nationalism, about foundational Black Americans, without taking a look at a woman from the 20th century who we know as Mother or Queen Mother Amy Euphemia Jock Garvey. She was probably the most significant woman of the 20th century, hand down. And believe it or not, she left us a clue about what questions are not being asked but are being addressed without necessarily considering what has been said before. Well, in October 25th, ironically so close to today's date, she wrote an article in 1925 called Women as Leaders, very powerful article. And one of the things she said around the issue of unifying our people around race and not necessarily around boundaries or national boundaries was this, and I think it is instructive. And she was talking about the role of women in the movements for freedom and for justice. And she said, listen, white women, they're rallying all of their forces and uniting regardless of national boundaries to save their race from destruction and preserve its ideals for posterity. And I'm going to repeat that. White women, whether they're in France, Europe, the Caribbean, Canada, the United States, white women are rallying all of their forces and uniting regardless of national boundaries to save what? Their race from destruction and preserve what? Its ideals for posterity. Without even getting into the rest of the article, that one sentence provides some powerful insight and instruction for us to analyze and glean today. Now, I don't know if you hear it as clearly as I do, but we must study not only the failures of our enemies, but their successes. What is it that they have done right? Because that was what the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey and his confidant and his partner in life were keenly aware of. What works well and what has worked well for others might also be instructive for us in this global attack on Black life, right? And so I just wanted to say that because that statement struck me so very intently and deeply. And just like the Sankofa concept, all things come back around. But if we don't go back and analyze what was said and done before, we'll miss the important jewels. Now, I'm not trying to provide any super, commentary on what has been done, but I will say what they are doing is raising some questions that should require us to at least go back in time to see how the ancestors addressed the same issues and what their perspective was so that it can form us to this day. But in terms of your question about the book, I thank you for asking that because this book is so powerful in that it does something that I have never seen done before. It is a book that not only attempts to honor the contributions to health and medicine that Black women, women from the continent of Africa and wherever we have landed in the diaspora have made towards the world of not only freedom and health, but medicine and therapy, acknowledging for the first time the African origins of some of the wellness practices that we are engaging in, unfortunately attributing only to women of the Eastern Indian and Eastern Asian tradition, for example, vaginal steaming, I discovered originated among African women. Ethiopian sisters do it. They call it the Webatis. The sisters of Mozambique in South Africa and sisters from Ghana and Nigeria have been engaging in the process of using air, fire, earth, and water to repair the womb after having childbirth, to address trauma, to prepare for fertility, for the making of conception, to address sexually transmitted diseases that we refer to as today or any imbalances of the womb. This is an African tradition. And I wanted to be able to reach forward in time, speaking as a grandmother, an 86-year-old grandmother, which I am only 45, but I did a little bit of time traveling in order to make sure that I conveyed some important lessons to my future descendants and also to your future descendants about who they are medically, about what legacy culturally, spiritually, and medicinally they hail from, using what the Most High only ever gave us and probably only ever will give us, which are a few tools or the four elements of air, fire, earth, and water to not only make a way for ourselves in the world, but to combat any aggressions that are launched against us and to wield these elements as effectively as our ancestors did, as manifested in scriptures, in oral tradition, and as recently as the civil rights movements that Dr. King left for us, a special jewel on the night before his assassination. So when I talk about what kind of divine insights and historical jewels are in this book, I get so excited. It's going to have to be a whole nother segment. But what I will tell you is this. I asked a question. I felt that there was something unfair about our current state of being in the world, that our enemies have satellites in space, that they have satellites under the ground, that they have surrounded us on all sides with a technology that seems so superior to our concerns about whether Beyonce or Rihanna deserved an award this month. There was an asymmetrical balance of power and reality that just didn't set well with my soul. And I said to the Creator, listen, are you okay with this? Because I'm not okay with this, and I got some questions for you. Why is there so much imbalance of power? And the answer I received, believe it or not, sister, was you have everything that you need to destroy your enemy. And I couldn't settle with that. So I asked again, what are you referring to? Because the only thing I ever see you gave us was the elements. And the answer was exactly. And so with that gave birth to this book, because I went on a mission to prove very evidentiarily what I was receiving in the spiritual that my soul was satisfied with. But I knew as the attorney that I am, I need some evidence. I need some external, whether even if it's circumstantial evidence to validate what I'm saying. And the result of that was the Divine Self-Care Strategy. And I can't wait to talk to you more about it. But it is a book that blows the lid off of so many topics that we are indirectly and directly discussing right now, the issues of health, wellness, freedom, and health, the correlation between the two, the role of people who you would never think about in terms of health and freedom and self-care, like Mother Harriet Tubman, Mother Harriet Jacobs, the first self-emancipated Black woman on these shores to write her own biography and reveal to us what slavery really felt and looked and behaved like towards Black women. Everything that we know now had so much to do with her. These two women were alive at the same time, and not only did they leave us a rich medicinal legacy to build off of, but they are the perfect representations of what it means to embody freedom and health. Because you cannot have one without the other. And so everything, if you don't take away anything else, if you never hear anything else from me, the one thing I want our sisters in this room to hear right now is that you must always think about the relationship between freedom and health. And the tools that were given to us to do that are the same tools that Mother Harriet Tubman, that the Honorable Frederick Douglass, that the Honorable Dr. Martin Luther King, that the Honorable Nathaniel Turner and Booker T. Washington and Harriet Jacobs and some enslaved ancestors who are lesser known used to secure freedom and health. And that's a few tools. I can't wait to talk with you about it some more, sis.
All right. Good thanks. How can folks get the book?
The book is available on Amazon. It's on sale right now in paperback, hardback, and ebook. It's called The Divine Self-Care Strategy. And self-care is one word, but it's S-E-L-F-Q-A-R-E. And you'll see that's a recurring theme in my business and in my brand. I use the Q to help people distinguish me because, unfortunately, there are a lot of people who have tried to take the title and run with it and the concept and run with it, but without the same historical, cultural, and spiritual context in which I am laying the groundwork for our children to continue in this legacy of freedom and health.
All right. I say. And, you know, family, as the sister was speaking about, we call her Saint Amy Jacks Garvey. She's one of our sister saints. We have 25 now, and we're working, of course, on our first educational tool or materials that will be a coloring book and a children's activity book, and we have other things coming. But I wanted to make sure that people kind of have some better understanding, whichever you prefer. Have you noticed that you rarely hear women who are supposed to be leaders or whatever you want to call them, have you noticed that you rarely hear them mention or say or talk about Saint Amy Jacks Garvey? I wonder why.
I do notice that. And in large part, it's because – oh, I'm sorry. Were you asking a question?
No. Please comment. I mean, I just wanted to point that out because, and I'm talking about even the more progressive ones, even the ones who read some stuff or know some stuff or whatever. Have you noticed they rarely, if ever, mention Amy Jacks Garvey?
Well, I do notice it, and I think it is incumbent upon us to change that trend. Sometimes it is because there's so much information and people don't necessarily take the time if someone hasn't directed their attention to why they need to be focusing on someone. But I think as long as I'm here and as long as you're here, our job, Queen, is to make sure that our family knows about the contributions this woman made, because the world is largely doing what it is doing today, whether that is through COINTELPRO, as you mentioned, as a direct response whether we are in a nationalist movement like the Nuwapia Nation, like I was, or the Hebrews or the Moors, so much of what we do now is a direct response to what Queen Mother or Saint Amy Euphemia Jacques Garvey did in conjunction with her husband. But in terms of balance, there is an imbalance of power and recognition. In fact, I wrote an article on it. It's on the African magazine about Queen Mother Amy Jacques Garvey's role in nationhood. She has something so powerful to share with us. And all of her writings, everything that we know about the UNIA and about the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey are solely due to her. Because she has the foresight as archivist to gather all of his articles and all of his writings and all of his inner thoughts that only she would have access to and create a volume of them. The first volume of that she did just because she was an archivist. When it was published, she gathered even more data to present to the world, and she continued to do this work long after her husband had transitioned. So she has so many powerful insights. In fact, I call her a prophetess, because in that same article that I mentioned to you about the women as leaders, she foresaw that if we did not redirect the course of Black destruction by these forces, that we were going to find ourselves dealing with Asian supremacy and having to either be completely crushed by it or reduced to subservience by it. And look at the world right now. Are we not seeing the brutality in Africa among the Asian nations and how they are simply stepping into the shoes of white supremacy, or what we misguidedly refer to as white supremacy, and picking up the rules of colonization and oppression, misguidingly presenting themselves like they did here initially in the United States as missionaries of martial arts and all things good, only to usurp that with their real intentions within a decade, where you can't even go into a salon or go into a restaurant because you are not Chinese or you are not whatever the predominant race is or culture is in that group. So, I mean, the prophetess as well, she left us some powerful insights. And the reason why, it's partly her fault, because she was balancing this need to manage her relationship as a woman who had to maintain a very feminine and almost passive role as a woman, but also her most keen political insights. So a lot of times when you're reading philosophies and opinions and the works that she gathered together, you think you're listening to the voice of Toni Martin or even the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey, but you're actually listening to the voice of Mother Amy Jacques Garvey or Saint Amy Euphemia Jacques Garvey. And until you recognize that, it is so easy to overlook her and the role she played in everything that we're doing today. It's incredible.
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, again, I think it's very important, and you're just so nice. And what I mean by that is we started off in saying how, you know, we're just so bombarded with information and people might have time and blah, 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 blah. And so I'm going to say, yeah, that's true, but at the same time, people have time to talk about other people. They have time to, you know, really elaborate on the work of other people. And I'm being more specific and say on the work of women. There's a reason why, particularly women who are in leadership position, there's a reason why they do not talk about Amy Jacques Garvey. And one of the reasons is that she questions the fact that Negro women, Black women, if you may, feel the need to want to imitate white women.
Mm.
That was one of the things.
Mm-hmm.
She raised that issue about hair and other things in terms of imitating or attempting to be more like our oppressor or the oppressor. And so when you have women who tend to do that, of course, they're not going to point somebody out that talks about that.
Mm-hmm.
See, we have to deal with some truth here.
Yeah, we really must. And again, I'm not talking about, you know, one, you know, grooming or beautifying themselves. I'm not talking about that. There is a difference in that and people really lessening their own identity for the sake of being accepted. And this is what's happening. And it was happening then, certainly. And so she addressed that, you see.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay.
You know, interesting you say that. It's interesting you say that, too. I think another reason why it's been hard to deal with her is because she also did what Mother Maria Stewart did, who was another name that we don't hear much about, but she was one of the pioneer speakers who started politically addressing back in the early 1800s the issues around freedom and the role that the black man was supposed to be playing in protecting black women. It made people very uncomfortable. She was one of the first women to take the platform. So inspired by David Walker and so angered by the way that white men had usurped her legacy, talking about estate planning, of her husband who had been a successful businessman and took all of his wealth and left her homeless, essentially. Well, she was speaking out against that in a way very similar to what Mother Amy Garvey was. And so when these women were talking about their expectations for protection, their expectations for what black manhood represented, it created a really difficult paradigm, an uncomfortable paradigm for brothers because they had never heard from black women before about what black women needed and expected and demanded to be protected in these ways. And so, you know, sometimes even for me, I go, oh my goodness, Mother Amy, I see why. You know, the brothers were having a difficult time because she would say, you know, listen, black man, you're not going to keep telling us that a better day is coming and don't do anything to usher in that day. We're becoming impatient, and if you don't get out of the front ranks, we are going to serve notice on you and on the world that we're going to be ready to push you aside, because if you're conducting yourself like a cowardly Negro man, we are going to take the prayer on our lips, and we're going to prepare our arms for any fray so that we can clear. And then she literally closed out by saying, listen, Mr. Black man, Ethiopia's queens will reign again, and it's her Amazon that may have to end up protecting the shores and the people. See, a lot of brothers had a real – and Brother Tony Martin, you know, is an expert on the Honorable Marcus Garvey. He opines on that. He talks about the fact that, you know, brothers weren't trying to hear from the sister about what they weren't doing and, you know, about what manhood looks like and represents. But when I tell you we owe it to ourselves and we owe it to her honor to study her words, whether they bring a sense of discomfort to you or not, because she warned us about the role that interracial relationships would have on the black family and on black women in particular. She struggled within her own relationship for the kind of respect and value that she deserved. And she, no one loved the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey more than this woman did. But if you read her works, you will hear some very quiet critique, almost like a warning to black nationalist women about, let me tell you, daughters, you better protect yourselves, because they will, in their efforts to achieve their divine purpose, they will walk all over you. They will extract everything out of your blood and your lifeline. So you deserve to be honored even more so than white women do. Who is more deserving than respect than the black woman? We who have endured the rigors of slavery, the deprivations of a compromised race. I mean, she loved so many jewels, you know, and she was an advocate for equality among women, but she was also a what I've heard some of our most eloquent and articulate Pan-Africans say, she was not a feminist. She was a womanist. Everything that she did around, you know, advocating for the rights of women to have a decent home, to have a decent life within the black family, she did it within the context of nationalism and race and family. always balancing the two so eloquently. And even that made people uncomfortable. But it was a difficult job for her because she had all of the makings of a world leader. And in fact, she was, for all intents and purposes, the leader of the UNIA, especially during the incarceration period. But she did not have the title. And even if you read her work, she had issue with that. But she was very respectful, very quiet about some of the things that she said. And if you are a keen reader, if you are insightful, you can pick up on some of the messages and the discontent she felt even within her own family about what she deserved and what Black women in general deserve to have in terms of the areas of respect, adoration, protection, and being valued by our own men. So she's battling all these things. I think that has so much to do why she is not given the reverence and respect that she deserves, even within the UNIA. You cannot have a mention of the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey, in my opinion, without equally calling on her name. You can't do it, but it's done all the time, and that's partially why we're still trying to figure out why we've gone wrong, because she has so many of the clues in her own writings. But if you keep overlooking her writings, thinking she was just a wife, just a mother, you're going to miss the solution to half of our problems.
Well, my sister, you kind of hit it right on the nose, and this is, again, why MWM is what it is and what it is capable of and will now do. We've recognized what has happened over the years, and so, you know, as they say, the buck stops here. We've made it very clear that we're not waiting any longer. For a whole decade now, we've been putting the call out, particularly to Black men's groups and organizations. And over the years, we can count on one hand, you know, how many have responded. And this was in regards to the issue of violence and abuse of our women and girls. So we've documented the various kinds of letters, emails, and other kinds of communications that we've sent over the past 10 years to various Black men's groups and organizations. And if they thought we were playing with them, then they got another thing coming, because we already knew, you know, what was going to happen, because we had already watched it happen prior to paying closer attention. And so now that there are all of these different anti-violence groups all over the country, most that are getting funded, but yet when you examine what is their position or what do they actually do when it comes to the issue of our women and girls, rape, molestation, trafficking, kidnapping, missing, 95% of them have nothing that they do in that regard. And so come next year, we're going to be able to give folks a very clear picture of what has happened and why, and also be prepared to do what has to be done. Now, those who have been listening to our program, they know that I'm getting ready to work with a brother who has his own security agency in Atlanta. He has agreed to be our consultant, or my consultant, so that we have our own security and investigation agency. We're not asking people anymore to protect our women and girls. Y'all don't want to do it? Okay. We're going to do the Yara Santawa thing and some others.
Mm-hmm.
You see, because you can't continue to go on like this. We're not having it. Bottom line. And so we are prepared to take the next step. If folks don't want to step up and fight for us, it's okay. I mean, it's not really, but at the same time, we're not waiting for you. You see,
you know,
that's what time it is.
What you just said is perfectly in alignment. Mother Amy Garvey took on the role of self-defense. In fact, there was a point where she was so instrumental in cleaning up the UNIA's financial records and the people who were extorting the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey hated her so much, because she was also, for all intents and purposes, a lawyer. And what she came in and did, which we should always be grateful for, was she came in and brought the chain of custody concept into the UNIA, meaning that there was not a single dime that came into the nation that the Honorable Marcus Messiah Garvey touched. So that personally removed him. In fact, that was partially why his case was defensible, because she, when she came in and instituted her knowledge, because she had been in law firms and seen how things work and created these chain of custody, well, the people who were exploiting him were so upset that they actually tried to throw, one brother tried to throw her down the stairs because she instantly caught an interruption in the finances, confronted him about it, and he was so peed off that he literally tried to throw this sister down the stairs because she was interfering with his money.
Wow.
Come to find out, he was actually one of the plants that the Secret Services had put into the UNIA to steal money so that they can build a case around this extortion of money, right? But what was so interesting was she said after that she got the gun. Well, you won't know that it's her because she sounds so masculine in her writings, in her political
right.
analysis for that time. And I don't mean that disrespectfully, but she was
right.
so politically astute, not just on national politics, but this sister could verse with you and any man globally. Globally, there was not a person. In fact, she ended up writing a letter to W.E.B. Du Bois, who ironically started to show some respect for her after the death of the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey. And she had to say to him, look, professor, in a letter, you know, I understand that the tone of my letters is something you have not been accustomed to. But she said, I'm accustomed to talking with my husband and taking part in conferences with men as man to man, that I don't think or act as if I were just a woman, right? So she was a woman of her times. And so, but what she was trying to say is, listen, don't try to put me in no shell.
I know
what I'm talking about. I can go toe to toe with you, King. Like, I know politics. I know this issue of racism better than anyone. And my husband and I, we go verse to verse. I challenge him on positions. And so I'm just doing what I do naturally. So forgive me if you feel like I'm being out of line. But this is what I do, right? Like, she actually wrote a letter to him, and that was a quote from her letter. But she was learning how to defend herself because people wanted to, even after the arrest, the men of the organization were so intimidated by her. They wrote a letter insulting her and trying to deceptively act like they were protecting her. And they said, Mrs. Garvey is not part of this committee. Mrs. Garvey is not an officer of the association. Mrs. Garvey doesn't actively or passively control the organization. And they just went on and on. He said, and it's beneath the dignity of common decency to attempt to drag the name of an innocent and helpless woman into an arena where she cannot properly defend herself. Are you kidding me? That's what they were saying about Mother Amy. These arrogant
wow.
Negroes were so disrespectful, but they were intimidated by her because she was so powerful that they could not, they were just trying to let the world know, listen, she's not running things. But she was
right.
running things for all intents and purposes. And so much so that there was a lynching that happened in the South, and the Honorable Marcus Mosiah Garvey didn't even want her to go. But she was so moved and so in tune with the fears. And she said, you know what, I'm going to go. She went down in the South where this lynching had happened, and she gave one of her most powerful speeches, and she made the people uplifted. But she had a pistol with her. Honey, she moved with the pistol. She was like a Mother Harriet Tubman. Like, she was prepared
wow.
for death, but she was not prepared to die without taking a life in return. This is the legacy that
that's
we hail
right.
from.
Right.
This is
well,
why we
that's
don't
right.
Well, and what you're doing
to say.
Is perfectly in alignment. It's in alignment with that spirit. We're not going to sit
yeah.
back and wait for someone to
no,
come and organize themselves.
Yeah, we can't. We cannot wait. In fact, you know, I think there's a speech called Why We Can't Wait. But but at any rate, listen, family, we have run out of time. There's a quick quote. You know, our sister has inspired me. You know, we do a lot of research, and there are several quotes that we have posted periodically from St. Amy Gotts Garvey. And one I'm going to say right now, and it is to our sisters, because, again, sisters, we are coming for you. Those of you who are ready, well, we got something for you. The next year, you will see and hear more about the Million Women March Universal Movement, A Million Black Women Rising, the Amama Society, and more. We've got some stuff for you. Believe me, we're now going for our Million Sisters campaign. We want a Million Sisters members in this next year. But here's the quote from St. Amy Garvey: "Be not discouraged, black women of the world, but push forward regardless of the lack of appreciation shown to you." This is one of her actual quotes. And so she knew, yes, she knew and we knew that we are unappreciated, discarded, marginalized, you name it. Even Brother Malcolm said, the most disrespected person, I'm paraphrasing, in America is the black woman. Even Brother Malcolm said this. You understand? So we know, you know, we can validate what we're saying because others have also said it, and others who are even more qualified than some of us. But the point is, we've had enough. And we are going to now do something about it. And I do remember Minister Farrakhan even saying to me once that when the women decide that some stuff needs to happen, oh, it's getting ready to happen. You know, once the women say it, it's going down. Well, family, best believe it's going down. So, my sister, I thank you for sharing with us. And I certainly look forward to, you know, us moving forward, working together. We're going to demonstrate Kujichagulia. We're going to demonstrate Ujamaa and all of the other principles of both Kwanzaa, but also of Ma'at. We are going to now show these things in what we do. Lastly, for folks who are interested in joining us tomorrow at 1 o'clock, we will be doing a Zoom meeting. For those who are interested in being a part of the Million Women World March next year, we are beginning to formulate the committees. 1 o'clock, it's national and international. You can text me or you can email me. If you text, you can text me for the Zoom link at 267-636-3802. Again, 267-636-3802. At nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. We told you all that this year was just a kickoff for a year-long commemoration, and it is. The Million Woman March will have a world march next year, and it will be in at least five nations. We have verified five nations so far. We know there's going to be more as we proceed in the next few months, but we're letting folks know now, don't think you're going to be like popping in at the last minute and then acting like you know, because we know how that works. And we've already tested the waters this year because we put a lot of information out this past year just to see who was going to step up and do the right thing. Well, let me tell you, wait till you get the report on Philly. Oh, wee. It's so interesting. But y'all know this is the home of the boule. And I don't mean that in the context of just the surface stuff. Oh, it's much deeper than y'all think. Anyway, we're going to close out. My sister, I thank you again. Family, listen. We've created several cadres for MWM Universal now, including the African Women for not only justice, but for reparations. We have our own unit of black women, African women, who will be working together on reparations, reparatory justice. Why? Oh, let me see. Women often have the children in their care. So, how do we prepare for the next generation to not wait until they're 18, 19, 20, or later to know about certain things? Well, let's see. If our women know it, maybe we could start getting this next generation ready in a more, you know, realistic time period. How about that? That's just a starter. Anyway, moving right along. Sister, this is what we say when we close out often, and it is, we're going to leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of Ma'at and Hotep, but remember, there can never be any real Hotep, meaning peace, until there's truly Ma'at, and not just justice, but truth, reciprocity, balance, and so forth. But in this case, we're going to focus on a specific element, and it is justice, because y'all know if there's no justice, there's no what? No peace, no Ma'at, no justice, no Hotep. So with that said, family, we will be back next week. Again, if you want to join us tomorrow at 1 to get the first briefing, or the second briefing, actually, for what's getting ready to happen with the Million Women World March. By the way, oh, we got some powerful stuff for y'all. I'm telling you, when it comes to what's getting ready to happen, you might want to check it out. But again, you can email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, national spelled out, MWM@AOL.com, or you can reach us through the A Million Black Women Rising, which is AMBR. Wait a minute, A Million Black Women. I'm sorry, AMBWRNOW@gmail.com. Again, AMBWRNOW@gmail.com. If you email us at either one of those, we will send you the link. And then again, you can also text us at 267-636-3802. All right, family, listen, we are out. Love you all. Thank you all. Again, we are welcoming. We're in our campaign for fundraising. Our Cash App is Baba Yaga's going to make me say this, y'all. Our Cash App, he's been all here about this. Cash App, $HOT1111. Again, $HOT1111. We, in 13 years, have not really pushed a campaign for MWM. We've been talking about the We Charge Genocide, but we have not really, you know, tried to, you know, ask people, you know, donate. We don't do that. Right now, though, we do need your, we're talking about a world event here. So we do need your support. Again, Cash App, $HOT1111, or you can go to our PayPal, and that's at nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. Our new website will be up soon, so we'll have some other kinds of ways that you can support. We waited until we wanted to make the announcement official for the Million Women World March, which we did. Oh, didn't you mention earlier, Sister Sheila, October 25th? Didn't you say that St. Amy did something on October 25th?
Yeah, in fact, the quote that both you and I read from came from the article she wrote on October 25th, 1925, known as Women as Leaders.
Oh, isn't that ironic? Because the Million Women March anniversary is October 25th.
Wow.
And this is
wow.
Our 25-year anniversary.
Women as
Isn't
Leaders,
that,
yes. She wrote that article October 25th, 1925. I'm big
wow.
on dates when it comes to Mother Harriet, so I'll never
wow.
forget that date.
Yep. Well, our
yep.
anniversary date is October 25th. Yes.
Wow,
I just, you know, I love it. I love
mm-hmm.
the connectivity.
The dots are connecting. The dots are connecting.
Yes, they are. Yes, they are.
It's
hey, family, y'all better recognize. I'm telling you, we warned you before. We're warning you again. We told folks in 2017, sister, that the year 2020 was going to be like none other, and it would be a year of perfect vision. Well, guess what happened in 2020? COVID. But we said, we told them in 2017. I didn't know it was going to be COVID, but I knew that something was going to happen in the year 2020.
Mm.
And boy, he did it. So y'all better listen now. I'm telling you, something's getting ready to go down.
Mm-hmm.
Better give them a
and she, Mother Amy, the second part to that quote you gave about not being discouraged, Black women, she said, a race must be saved, a country must be redeemed, and unless you strengthen the leadership of vacillating Negro men, we will remain marking time until the yellow race gains leadership of the world, and we be forced to subservience under them or extermination. That's the prophecy. Remember when I said that she was telling us that if we don't get it together, your quote about being not discouraged was her commanding that we never forget that despite all of the injustices against us imposed by both white inferiority imposturing itself as white supremacy and from its negative effects on our relationships with Black men. Don't be discouraged by that because we don't have time to cry in the lack of appreciation shame you. We have to save a race, not just an ethnic group, a race. So it is incumbent upon us, and I believe that if there will ever be a pan-African woman, it will be rooted in the hearts and minds of Black women throughout the diaspora. Whether we call ourselves African or whether we call ourselves indigenous people, it is going to have to be the women who connects the dots. And I pray that my book can be a catalyst for it because I did reach out to sisters from the continent and said, I see you. I recognize your contributions. I am a part of you. I'm a part of your family. And you need to give us what belongs rightfully to us. Knowing what we now know about what was taken from each other, we have to make steps towards mending and creating repair in our own hearts and minds. It will be the women if there will be a return to Pan-Africanism in the way that Mother Amy Garvey had envisioned it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in that family, we say it's time to raise up the mother of civilization universally. Therein is going to be a key answer and element because it's only one woman of one race that can say she is the original mother. We either claim it now or, believe me, somebody else will. And best believe we are claiming it. Taking it, taking our rightful places. All right, my sister, let us move on. Family, we thank you all again. Pamoja Tudashenda, together we shall win. And you know what? It's going to be right about now in our lifetime. Yes, indeed.
Amen.